Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm still on tour, people. In August, Seattle, Richmond. September, West Nyack, Syracuse, Virginia Beach, Columbus. Today's guest, rapper, actor, Simon Rex, a.k.a. Dirt Nasty. Go to BurtBurtBurt.com.
This is the BurtCast.
Just look to the right, feels. This feels more like comedy.
So you can just talk into the...
But now I feel too far. I'm going to move the chair. Watch this.
Perfect. Perfect.
There we go.
That's and then just talk. Totally. Yeah. Let me get your levels.
How do I say it? I'm just kidding. Yeah. One, two. Testes. Perfect. Testes. One,
perfect.
Two.
Perfect.
Testes. Testes. One, two.
I just got these Beats by Dre from this guy Jordan Knox. Uh-huh. I ran into him at the Jay-Z concert.
Uh huh.
And I've been using Ultimate Ears. Do you use Ultimate Ears?
Are we recording
that? Yeah, recording. And these things are so much fucking better.
I haven't made the leap to the Beats by Dre yet, and I have a home music studio, and I probably should. I always get these like free fancy headphones that I use and shit, but I haven't made the jump yet because I get free ones, but everyone swears by
them. Dude, they're fucking amazing.
What's so good? What's the difference?
They're just like
I use ear pods and I'm fine. I don't need.
He sent me the whole fucking pack. He sent me the pill, which is like a boom box. He sent me the.
The pill's awesome. My buddy's got that.
And they're fucking amazing. They're amazing.
That's why Dre hasn't put out an album in 8 years, because he's making... I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
We've been waiting for the Chronic 2, or the new album, for 7 years now. It's supposed to have been to come out. He's making so much money off those. He's like, and rap's kind of slowly dying.
So rap
he's like, well, why put out another album that at this point that he did years ago would kind of probably sound... I met him actually the other day. Nicest. He goes to my gym, Dr. Dre.
Are you shitting
me? And I never want to bother him because he's like.
He's fucking huge now.
Dr. Dre, and you see people at the gym, and you know, the LA rule is you kind of just understand you don't bother people.
Yeah.
You know, and I always see him, and you know, in the mirror, you kind of, at the gym, there's mirror angles to catch looks, and you know, I never want to bother him, but I'm like, that's fucking Dr. Dre. Like, I grew up.
He knows, you know, he knows who you are.
Well, it turns out he does, and I never wanted to bother him, and he's always got. I always see people, I mean, as soon as he walks in and goes to his first set of curls, someone's coming up to him, I just don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
So I never bothered him. I saw him out the other night at a club, and he waves me over to him. And the security guard brings me to him, and he's got a grin ear to ear. I'm like, I'm looking behind me like he thinks I'm, or someone else has to be. He's like, no, you come here. And he's smiling ear to ear, and he's like, you know, oh man, your shit's so funny. We watch you on YouTube. I guess he watches probably his kids, probably showed him.
Yeah.
Like my funny, dirt nasty stuff or whatever. I always put up comedy shit. And I could just tell by a smile on his face that he had seen something or scary movie. I don't know what he'd seen. I didn't want to ask. But anyway, he's like, man, he's like, you're so funny, man. I'm like, oh, shit, thank you. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I just, you like, just, I don't even know. I was like speechless.
Yeah.
And I was like, I always see you at the gym, but I don't want to bother you. He's like, next time you see me at the gym, just come say what's up. It's all good. So
shut the fuck
I went
up
to him the other day at the gym, said what's up, kept it moving. I didn't want to bother him. But I see him at my gym all the time. And I always wanted to ask him what's going on with the new album, but I'm telling you, it's because those do so well.
The Beats by Dre fucking...
Dude, he's making so much money off those, he doesn't even need to anymore. He's just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm making money off headphones.
He's one of those... He's, you know, prolific in the sense that he started back when you had to have costumes to rap, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And he came out of that. Yeah, think about all the people he knighted by saying, I'll do your...
Man,
I mean... I have so many fucking questions to ask you. I don't know where to start.
I have so many answers for you.
Speaking of Dre acknowledging in the man cave, Simon Rex, a.k.a. Dirt Nasty.
Thank you for having
you, I met you. You're never going to remember this. Walking down the street in New York, you were with Jordan.
Bad start,
You were with Jordan Rubin.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yep.
How long ago was this?
This is 1971. 1999, 1998.
Oh, dude, yeah. Come
I think
on,
you were just... You were just getting out of being a VJ?
Yeah, that was like, that's about right, 98. I was there 96, 97, almost 8. So yeah, that's about right.
And I think I saw, did you used to go to his, he used to have parties in that loft in Soho?
Absolutely, 100%, at his old place, yeah.
And
okay, we drank, that. We probably partied there. Yeah.
We did.
I met every comic, Jordan Rubin, or you did stand up, I imagine.
Yeah.
And I met every comic you can imagine through Jordan Rubin. And Nick Swartzen, I've met everyone now.
Oh, Nick's like, I've known Nick for, years.
Well, it's a small circle. You guys all know each, especially in New York. It's just like, you guys, it's, I hear it kind of dilutes, but.
It dilutes in LA, but in New York, it's a tight.
Yeah.
And so, especially
well,
like.
I'm not going to say, oh yeah, of course I don't remember, but good to see you again. How about that?
And good seeing you again. But it's so funny because I saw that and I knew you from, I was addicted to MTV, so I knew you from MTV.
Right.
And then you got on
back
that
when they showed videos. I was at the end of that.
Yeah, you were.
I was at the very end of when they showed videos, and I would actually be like, coming up, we have a video from Metallica. That just doesn't exist anymore.
Not even, I don't know.
I was at
play
the
music.
Very end of the, you know, what molded our lives. I mean, I grew up, I remember watching, you know, the Video Killed the Radio Star, the first video that ever came out. I was a little kid glued to the TV in San Francisco in 1985 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, MTV is such a part of our lives. And then now this new generation of MTV kids, it's not music videos. It's like, it's become
reality.
Basically, MTV did start reality TV with the Road Rules and Real World.
Yeah.
It all started with that. And I remember asking them when I was there, because it was all starting to come on the air. I said, why do you guys show all this non-music programming material when you could be showing videos? They go, because we get 10 times the ratings for Real World. All these shows that we put on that we would have never guessed, we just put them on experimentally, and the numbers were through the roof.
Really?
And cut to 20 years later, it's all reality television. People love the shit.
It's MTV has – I remember being in my backyard when someone told me there was going to be an MTV. And I remember saying – I'm notorious for having no insight to the future of technology. I was like, you're telling me they're just going to play videos of music?
Yeah.
And I was like, good luck.
Yeah. Fat chance.
I said the same thing about email.
Right, yeah. Internet.
Yeah. Good luck.
You're telling me. What's a podcast?
So I knew you back then, and then you did Jack and Jill,
I think.
And those were all over the subways.
Oh,
the posters.
Oh, in New York. Because I was living in L.A. at that time, so I probably didn't see that. But yeah, I'd imagine that was when the WB was like the It New Young Network. Yeah. That doesn't exist anymore. Another like thing of the past, I did a few shows for them. I did that Amanda Bynes show, What I Like About You, which was like a sitcom that was right after Jack and Jill. So I did a few shows for WB. They were good to me. MTV and WB were good to me, man.
Yeah.
Those rhyme. I should put that in a rap.
Sweet. So,
WB
okay.
and MTV were good to me. Now I need a job. That doesn't rhyme.
So, but what's funny is, so I knew of you through that. Yeah. And you're kind of one of those, I would say just you're a staple of what people now, I think, assume Los Angeles nightlife to be.
Well, okay, I'll take that. I go out, I go out on the scene a bit, especially now that I'm single. It's funny, I had a girl for the last 4 years on and off, and then I was hibernating for a while.
Yeah.
So I really wasn't going out too much. When you got a girl, what's the point of going out in LA? It's just torture.
Yeah.
All you're going to do is see other girls you want to hook up with or some guy's going to hit on your girl. There's no point in going out with your girl in LA whatsoever. Maybe you lived in Denver, go out and have a drink with your girl at a bar, but it's not like that here.
Yeah.
Everyone's just hooking up and everyone's trying to – so I'm recently single – But I'm at the point where I'm too old to be in the club. So I'm kind of in this weird thing. I'm 39 years old where like I go out and I'm just like, I don't understand what the music they're listening to is. I'm so out of touch. I'm like, these kids are half my age.
You've helped define the music that is like what's insane to me is like you are responsible singly for me watching literally hours upon hours of YouTube videos
of
Mickey Avalon,
Three Loco,
Beardo, Three Loco. Only reason I know who Riff Raff is because of you.
I found that guy, man.
He needs to slow down on the vines. He has like 9 vines every minute.
Well, you know, he's like, he's one of my
fascinating.
Best. Yeah, he's an alien.
He's fascinating.
He's not human.
But
he's actually a genius.
It's the same reason I listen to Action Bronson.
Yeah,
there's a whole genre. Of like when I first heard 1980, at first I was like, oh, it's gonna be a joke song. It was a funny song, but it was a fucking good song.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. If I may just dive in real quick.
Please.
the whole point of my Dirt Nasty stuff was to make listenable, funny music because it's either a joke and the beats suck or it's the music's really good and you don't care about what they're saying because it's the same old shit, my car, my bitch, this and that. So I wanted to, especially as a white guy who worked on MTV and who played Eminem in a very big movie that everyone saw, Scary Movie 3, where everyone like, oh, he played Eminem, but now he's really, what am I, what's my brain supposed to digest here? Because this guy's just an actor who played Eminem and I'm supposed to like believe he's rapping. So obviously I tried stand up. I love comedy. I do all this YouTube viral funny shit on Vine, whatever. So I wanted to do comedy rap, but that's the fine line between it being like a complete joke and it being something that has replay value where the music's good. So I work with such talented producers because I know all these guys like Alchemist, who works with Action Bronson, and Mark Ronson, and all these really, you know, like really good producers.
You're working with Diplo now, right?
I work. Diplo just signed 3 Loco. We get beats from Diplo. So
Diplo's
like,
one of the coolest fucking guys in the world.
I'm getting these beats that are just like serious music.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I got to respect that and not just make it like, you know, joke. So it's fun and funny, but it's not, but I still want to make it to where you could bump it in the car over and over again. So that's the whole point. I'm trying to do that. So
you're doing it very well. You're doing it very well. But when I first listened to you guys, I was like, oh, check it out. I want to say it was when MySpace was still around.
Oh, yeah. That was huge. MySpace, that's what was the catalyst to us getting out there. It was like your own record label. You didn't need a label.
But what's even more is like, this is going to, and this is one of the most fascinating things about you that I wonder if you know or if you think or if you even are aware of, is the mythology of when you watch a video like that, and I see you guys in what looks to be like an old house in the hills doing an album, and it's you and Mickey Avalon. And,
yeah, that's my house,
Yeah, but there's an allure of, God, what happens in that house at nights? Like, what are the parties like? What are these guys doing? Are they fucking eating ecstasy every night? Are they drinking whiskey? Do they even sleep? How's he in such great shape? Does he go to the gym? Like, there is that allure is almost bigger, as big or it needs to be respected in a weird way as much as music. Because I watched that and I was like, I want to fucking party with these dudes. These guys look like they have the life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And to a certain degree, we do have the life, and I'm very thankful for the life we have. But at the same time, you know, it's funny. We'll be on the road, and it's like, you know, our music is so, you know, like, fuck yeah, party, all this crazy shit. And we'll go on tour. Like, I'd be on tour with Mickey Avalon back in the day, and we'd be, in Chicago, whatever fucking city in the world you can name. And afterwards, you know, it's not a good idea to party with your fans. That's just going to end up in bad trouble. So usually what we end up doing, believe it or not,
I break that rule every fucking night.
They always wanted to do a reality show on us, but we always said no, because if we were really to be exposed for what we really were, which is like some kind of neurotic Jewish like intellectual dude, I'm not saying like I'm really smart, but like we're not, you know, we are very cognizant of what we're doing on the music and putting it out there, and it is a character. We're playing a character, and yeah, there is some truth to it, and you see those micro, the little, you know, a microcosm of that evening of us recording. But then you want to know the sad truth is, or not sad, just the reality is that afterwards I'm putting on History Channel, and
I did not see that,
dude. And there was a time in my life where I fucking was partying all night, but that was in my 20s.
Yeah.
The music shit all happened 30 up. So at this point, I had gotten all that out of my system. So I was like, okay, I could create this character, go on the road, party, and have these young fans that fucking live through us and are just like, yeah, rock and roll party, but it's actually, you know, I try to tell them, look, it's all just an act. That song 1980, I hate cocaine. That's the worst drug on the planet. If I could tell people to do drugs, smoke some weed and have a beer. Don't do coke.
Yeah.
You know, but I it was almost like I created a monster with this 19 cocaine, because I'll be doing shows to this day. I'll do a show and someone throws a bag of blow on stage.
Shut up.
And I'm just like, dude, like, I'm not doing your blow. I don't even know you. If I did do blow, I ain't doing it with you. You know, everyone's always like, let's go smoke a joint in my car. It's like, no, I'm not getting trapped in your vehicle for 10 minutes so you could talk about me, you know, for 10 minutes. I can feel uncomfortable. Like, I don't need to get high that bad. You know what I mean? So it's sort of created a monster in a way, but, you know, it's all for fun, man. It's entertainment. But the thing about YouTube is you break that fourth wall, or Vine, or any of these things that used to be, you know, so you're looking at the person down the eye, and they feel like they really are connecting with you and know you, you know, minus music videos. You're talking to them. I'm doing YouTube videos, Vines, whatever, and it's like they know you, you know?
Yeah. But I feel like I genuinely know you.
Yeah.
When you walked up, I was like, oh, I watch your vines. Adam Richman and I were in stuck in an airport. From Man vs. Food,
we became friends through Vine. Which we'll get. Let's get into Vine in a minute too. Remind me, because I want to talk about the same psychology behind breaking the fourth wall and meeting people. Like, but go ahead.
But Adam said to me, "You got to see Simon Rex on Vine." We were in the airport. And I was like, "Shut up!" I introduced Adam to Vine.
Okay,
and he introduced me to.
Thank you, because he's a new friend of mine.
He's
and
great.
Now I eat the best food in every city I go to because
he's smart as fuck.
He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And every city I go to, I'm like, Adam. All right, I'm in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He sends me a text of 10 places. He goes, go here at 3 o'clock. The restaurant's waiting for me, and I don't even have to order. They just bring it out. Adam's your friend. Here you go. And I'm just like, wow.
He really
is. Foodie, so.
He's smart as shit.
Oh, he's a very smart guy.
He looks great, by the way, too. He's lost, like, fucking a ton of weight.
He's at my house the other day drinking a gallon of water. He just shredded, like, 50 pounds off. He had to stop doing the food challenges.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So, wait. Tell me what you're going to say about Vine.
Vine's been a great tool for me to...
How many followers do you have now?
It's changing, but it's like 1.2 million or something.
Are you
shitting
me? But
then I also have
a
character called Gate, my twin Steven, who has 700,000 followers. So I have almost like 2 million followers. And if you really think about it, it's more like when people watch a Vine, they're in their classroom or their office and they're sharing with three people. So it's really like you got a lot more eyeballs than that. It's probably closer to like 10 million people are familiar with like the Vine shit that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I've met a lot of really cool people through. I mean, it's 99.9% garbage up there, and it's getting worse and worse. And, you know, Chris D'Elia I've met through there.
Yeah.
Brittany Furlan, Adam Richman. I've met
Jordan Burt.
What's said to be the best Vine yet on all the blogs on Reddit and everything. We did this one Vine where we're rapping in an alleyway and I almost dropped the N-bomb and he does a camera trick and we turn into these nerdy white guys. And that one, I learned a lot from him. So you meet these Viners, so quote unquote, people are, there's an actual term in the lexicon now, Vine famous.
Yeah.
And people come up to me now, they're like, hey, you're Vine famous. They don't know that in the past 20 years I've been doing other shit.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, you know, 13 year old kids that have it. And what it is I realized it's like an updated reel in your pocket every day of characters that I could create that I may never get to show in an audition when I go up for stuff. You know, I get to write my own shit. I get to direct my own shit. I get to do my own wardrobe. You produce the whole thing within 6 seconds. You got to get a joke out.
Yeah.
And it's actually an art form, the Vine process, because you don't get to edit it. You have to do it in one.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you, because some of your Vines are so... not complex that I go, how did you do that in one take? Like, how many times,
sometimes it's one take, sometimes it's 20.
Yeah.
I've gone out with Jordan Burt and Casey James, another big Viner, and we've spent 5 hours out trying to get some Vines and not posted one because they just weren't funny.
It seems like you guys had the next level Vine, like you were saving your Vines. That was the other thing, is that I told everyone you were going to be on my podcast at my show this weekend in Dayton. And the number one thing people say about you is, holy shit, he must have the greatest life in the world. Is he really fucking rich? Because it's like you're always in a new fucking city. You're in Palm Springs.
I mean, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Compared to most of the world, yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the people I know in LA, no. I'm like middle class.
Yeah.
I own a house. I drive a Prius. I have a 68 Buick Riviera that I never drive because the gas is too expensive.
Yeah.
It's like I'm just a normal dude. As an actor, you have peaks and valleys. You know, I just did a lead in a studio film, made a lot of money. I got a mortgage to pay, bills to pay. All of a sudden, you're back down. You know, it's up and down, up and down, up and down. That's how Dirt Nasty was born, was because as an actor, you have all this downtime. You're lucky to work 6 months out of the year as an actor. You're lucky to work 3 months out of the year as an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's tough. It's a tough grind, especially with reality television taking over, because I did mostly television. So the music was just a creative outlet, because I always produced beats. I always had a home studio and made beats. That's how the whole Mickey Avalon thing started, was that my boy was like, hey, I know this rapper you should meet. And I was like, you know, I'm not trying to, I'm just doing it for fun. He's like, no, you should meet him. And I met Mickey Avalon and Andre Legacy, who we formed a group called Dyslexic Speed Readers, and we did that song My Dick, which is sort of a cult classic, you know. I'm sure, you know, I don't know if the listeners know it, but that song ain't going nowhere.
If you are at all unfamiliar with any of Simon's work, just go online – and just type in Dirt Nasty.
Yeah.
And every video has about 7 million hits or something.
Yeah, they do well online. Oh, can I do a quick plug? My new album just finished. It comes Palatial out August. Palatial. August 20th on iTunes, coming out real soon. You could pre-order it right now on iTunes.
What's today? Today's the 14th?
It's in like a week. Yeah,
it's in like a week. Pre-order today, everybody. Go on iTunes. Yeah, pre-order it.
$7.99, and you'll support a good Jewish man who's just trying to make it. And that was cheesy. And and I got Beardo on it. I got Andre Legacy on it. I got Too Short on it. I got Three Loco on it with Riff Raff and Andy Melnikas. I got some really talented. I got producers. It's a lot of fun, man.
Who's the most famous person in your cell phone?
Shit, Adrian Brody, Paris Hilton. I don't know. Those are pretty. Everyone knows.
Those are really big.
Shoots.
Do you get nervous meeting famous people?
It depends on who they are. You know, it's funny. Like, I don't get nervous when I meet actors because I am one and I know that it's just whatever. I get nervous when I meet a professional because I'm a huge sports fan.
Yeah.
So if I met Steph Curry from the Warriors, who's I'll run around my living room for hours on end watching the playoffs because of my Golden State Warriors or my 49ers or whatever. Yeah. That to me is something that I am enamored by and starstruck by.
Really?
And more so than an actor or a musician, because I do music and acting, that I sort of understand it more.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm a normal guy, so they're normal guys. But when I see an athlete, they're like a superhero to me.
Yeah, that's
they're
interesting.
They're not human, so I'm more and I still wouldn't be bother them, but I would be more starstruck. I would still never ask for an autograph or I might ask for a photo. I'm a Laker hater. I saw Kobe Bryant and I instinctively just ran up and got a photo with him. Just
really?
Because I'm like, that's like Michael Jordan. That's like something you could show your grandchildren, you know?
Yeah. I've never gotten a photo with a famous person.
I've done it, I think, two or three times in my life, and that was one of them. I just instinctively was like, I saw him. He was at my table at this event. And I just was like, oh, can I get a quick pic?
Yeah.
And his wife recognized me and was whispering in his ear, that's the guy from the... Yeah. I saw him go, oh, yeah, Scary Movie. He knew Scary Movie, so I was in. I wasn't just some scrub.
Yeah.
But, So I think athletes I get more starstruck by than anything else.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't really get starstruck much by athletes. For me, it's rappers. I met Lil Wayne Juvenile when I first moved out here.
Uh-huh.
They were staying at the same hotel I was, and I fucking lost my shit.
Yeah.
Because I was a big...
Yeah, it's interesting. Since I do music and acting, I feel like it resonates more music because, music is something that people, and this sounds so cliche, but it's the soundtrack to your life. Like, you'll go to the gym with your music, you'll drive around to your music, you'll be, music is so ingrained in your life that it's when people come up to me and they're stoked on Dirt Nasty, see the starry eyes way more than I saw you in that movie, oh, that was cool. If it's the music, they're like, dude.
Yeah, music connects. Music connects more.
Yeah, it connects with the heart more than a 1.5-hour movie or a TV show, because it's in your it's like it's the rhythm of it's a weird psychology behind it, man. It's like people, you're in their fucking brain all day, you know? And even if you're not listening to it, if you're singing it in your head later that day, or you're quoting it, it's just part of your life, more so than a TV show.
Yeah. Were you always into hip hop when you were a kid?
Oh yeah. I grew up on, it's funny you say that. I could retire tomorrow because I grew up on Ghetto Boys.
Yeah.
Two Live Crew.
Uh-huh.
Too Short.
Well, it had to be Too Short if you're from San Francisco.
I'm from the Bay.
Yeah.
So I was like, I remember in sixth grade, this kid had a cassette tape on a Walkman, and he played it for me in the locker room. And I remember I was listening to this rapper talking about getting his dick sucked in a Cadillac. And I was like, I was like, no way. Like, is this like, holy shit. And I went to Alameda High School, which is adjacent to Oakland, and it was 5 minutes away is East Oakland, which is where Too Short's talking about getting his dick sucked on 69th Avenue. I'm like, I drive by that street every day. I'm like, this is crazy. He's really,
I gotta keep my eyes out.
Yeah. And I remember it changed my life. And then I heard Ghetto Boys and like talking about, you know, these really, you know, it's like watching a horror movie or The Godfather. It's like they're talking about killing people and all these things. And yeah. I was like, holy shit, it's just like, you know, and Two Live Crew was on some Miami party shit.
That's where we grew up in Florida. So Two Live Crew
was you're
like,
from Florida. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Shit.
So cut to 20 years later. I got a song with Too Short on my new album. I did a song with Two Live Crew, and Willie D from the Ghetto Boys came to a Kesha show that I opened up for, and with his daughter.
Hold on. You know fucking Kesha?
Yeah, yeah. Kesha's on my album. She's on my last album.
Are you fucking
kidding
me? No,
she's a good friend of mine.
How did I not fucking know this?
Yeah, we have songs together.
Dude, I come out every night on stage to Die Young.
Oh, no way.
And I fucking rip my shirt off, pound a beer, and I fucking sing the song.
She's a good friend of mine.
Such an unprofessional way to start a comedy show. Yeah. But I fucking,
people hate on her, but she's...
I love Kesha.
She's awesome.
I can't help it. I'm fucking obsessed with her music.
You know what? She's fucking one of the boys. She's literally so humble and cool. I remember her just...
How come you don't have a podcast?
You know, we've been talking about doing one with Three Loko. I think with Three Loko would be a great podcast. Yeah. I think that's going to be in my... I see that in my future.
It's such a viable way to... It's a new... Just like you
maybe
said,
maybe you
Vine.
Help me get one started. I don't know. I want to do it. Yeah. I'd love to do it out of my house just like this.
Oh, dude. You got to. It opens a
Nasty's
dialogue.
Cave, you know, or whatever. Yeah, whatever.
It opens a dialogue with your fans that is completely and totally... You know, and I think it also kind of is a reflection of what you're into. Like who I've had on is W. Kamau Bell, the guy from last week.
Awesome.
I love talking about race. I love having an open, honest conversation with it. And then, and obviously, I'm a fucking huge fan of yours. Now,
thanks, man.
You got to do a fucking podcast.
I'd love to. It's a good idea. You know, my manager and I have been talking about it, and I think that's in. I see that in the future. I do.
Super easy.
Yeah.
So,
if you're doing it, anyone can.
So wait. Now let's talk. I want to talk about the video in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That video. If you don't know what this video is, it's a video of you just videotaping yourself doing a character talking about the architecture on this street. Shirts off. Beautiful day. I mean, and then all of a sudden, this car—not even a nice car. It's like a Nissan Sentra, I think, or whatever. But it kind of beat up. Stops and then backs up, and the guy says, "Can I help you find something?" It is one of the feeling you get when you get angry or you get like
confrontation,
where you get butterflies in your heart and you're just like, it happened to me every time I watch it. Wow. It happens to me because I go,
because it was real,
because it's real.
It was real.
What?
Oh, you want the backstory on it?
Tell me. Okay. Yeah.
So, I forget if you guys want to see it out there. I think it's called Dirt Nasty Walks Through Atlanta, or we got to find out what
type
it
in
is.
Dirt Nasty Atlanta and it'll come up.
Yeah. So I was I went to shoot Scary Movie 5 last year in Atlanta, and my hotel was in Buckhead, which is a nice affluent neighborhood.
Yeah.
And right behind my hotel was this historic neighborhood of nice houses, and I was like really into Instagram at the time. This is before Vine, and I'm really into taking pictures. My dad was a photographer, so I was like, let me go take some pictures of some cool old colonial homes or whatever the architecture is called out there. So I'm walking around and it's fucking 100 degrees out. So I got my shirt off and I'm walking around in the heat taking pictures of houses in this nice neighborhood. I don't look like a hardened criminal. Hardly that. I would think I would look like someone who was just
someone's son
pictures.
Walking around.
So I was just taking pictures of houses, and this car kept following me around, and I was sort of in the middle of doing a YouTube bit as well, where I was just like pretending to be a tour of, you know, with a thick southern accent, like, well, this house here was built back in 1847 by Clionel Davis. Just being an idiot. Just, you know, on my first day there. And
this is your first day.
First day in Atlanta. First day. And I'm just walking around my neighborhood, and this car is following me. And I'm just like, kind of like, is this car following me or am I losing? Whatever. So I just kept doing it. All of a sudden, the car reverses and is following me at the speed that I'm walking. And it's, you know, just some older, you know, white guy. And he rolls up to me, and I forget exactly what he says, but he confronted me and says, you know, basically, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? What am I doing? Well, this is America. I'm walking around taking photographs of houses. I think he thought that I was like casing out the neighborhood to possibly, you know, I don't know, maybe rob a house and take photos of entryway. I don't know what the fuck he thought I was doing, but it couldn't have been that, you know, threatening.
Yeah.
But to him it was. And, you know, I'm walking around, you know, just taking photos, and he, for some reason, this guy felt threatened by it. So he confronted me, and I kept the camera rolling on my iPhone as opposed to hitting stop. I was like, oh, this might make some good, you know, YouTube. Oh,
It's fucking real.
That was totally real. And what I did was I think I titled it something about racism or anti-Semitism, even though I don't think it was, I don't think he was like, look at this Jewish guy. Because I mean, I'm Jewish, but it's not like I look like the stereotypical Jewish guy, and I know it's the South. And so I kind of flipped it into a racial thing just to make it a little more meat to it, even though it wasn't, and maybe that wasn't the best idea, but that's what gives it that.
Yeah,
that feeling of, you know,
it's all the comments underneath are, what did he say? Because he said something and it took off, and you're like, oh, I guess they don't like Jews down here.
Yeah,
and I
don't even know if that was the case. I just thought it would make it more, you know, resonate and hit a place inside, you know, and I wish I could remember exactly what he said, but he was basically saying something along the lines of, you know. You should get out of here. Don't be taking pictures. I'm like, excuse me. I'm like, this is a public street.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to walk. This is America. I'm going to walk down the street and I'm going to take more pictures of these houses. I like the architecture.
Yeah.
These are beautiful homes, sir. What's the problem? And he's threatened to call the police. I go, you know what? Call the cops. I'm going to sit down right here. Please do sit down and call the cops. You know what? I'm going to call the cops because I'm being harassed right now. And it turned into this whole thing, and I just kind of kept the camera on him without him knowing.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it was. It was just this guy tripping out on me for no reason, and I kind of exaggerated it for effect, and for good reason, because everyone loves that one. I remember being on set, and it just, the YouTube hits were just going up. I'm like, why is this one so interesting? I'd be on set. People would be coming up to me at work at Scary Movie, like, what was that shit that happened to you the other day? I saw it on YouTube. I'm like, damn, this shit's really getting out there.
Yeah.
So that's the story behind that one. It was just sort of with the few real moments. A lot, obviously, all my stuff on YouTube, I don't put any real, it's obviously acting bits, comedy skits, freestyling in a car, rapping, whatever. That was very real. So I thought it would be cool to post it, you know.
Oh, it's fascinating, and all I could think about were two things. Number one, when the Trayvon Martin thing happened, that was the exact same scenario.
It really was.
It's identical, and I thought, wow, you actually have almost firsthand experience with what that feels like.
Yeah,
and
it's funny you say that because it's actually true. It's like that could have been the catalyst to what happened with it. It's like, what? I'm just walking around, and
you have a shorthand. Because it's really fascinating, and if you watch the video, you're probably going to think I'm looking too much into it. But I was really fascinated how quickly you over trumped him with education. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You just simply turned on what is what I like to call, and I don't, this is just a broad stroke term of what it is like country club white guy. Uh-huh. You turned on white guy, and you went into you were like, I know I'm not wrong. I've never been wrong in one of these scenarios. I know how to handle this situation. Right. I know how to handle you. You're being confrontational. You backed up. You asked. I'm doing nothing. I'm looking at the architecture. My father's into architecture, and like you literally, and I thought, if you're a young black kid, you may not have that shorthand to be able to talk back to an older white dude.
Right. Right.
Your only defense may be take a swing at him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised at how quick I came with that. It was just like a visceral reaction. I just sort of...
You were angry, but you were intelligent, and you were also like...
I took the high road, too. I just sat there, and I was just like, instead of being like, fuck you, asshole, leave me alone.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what, sir? You're wrong. Call the cops. I'll sit right here. I'm going to sit right here, wait for him. Matter of fact, I'll call the cops. It was like, these aren't the joys you're looking for. Type shit.
Did you think of that though when the Trayvon Martin thing happened? That you're like,
I don't think I did. I don't think it rang any bells with that. There's another famous case, the Oscar Grant, you know, Hill Station, which hit home because that was my BART station, and that story to me was a lot more. I could relate to it because I went to that BART station every single day as a kid. I lived 5 minutes from that place. So
they just shot him in the back. Huh?
Yeah, I just watched. You got to see that movie. It's probably the best movie of the year. Brilliant, brilliant movie. You know what's going to happen at the end of the movie, and you're still sitting on the edge of your seat. It was fucking brilliant. But it lends itself to what is America, which especially in the South, which it's right out on the table.
Yeah.
But I still don't know if he was like, look at this Jew or whatever. I don't know.
I don't understand why he stopped you. Because in my head, I'm like, you look like someone that might own one of the houses.
It was like Beverly Hills of Atlanta, and it was just some rich guy who saw some, you know, kid with his shirt up with his hat backwards, you know, fucking talking to the camera all loud, you know. I don't know why he felt he had to do that, but I'm glad he did because it made for some good YouTube.
It fucking did awesome.
So, yeah.
So what's, so the part, what is like, everyone knows that I'm a big partier, and I think I have a reputation for partying, and people think.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You don't know anything about me?
Well, I mean, I don't. I'm not going to lie. I don't. But once you hit me up and I, you know, started looking into it, I saw everyone flipping out. They're like, oh, my God, these guys would be amazing together. Yeah. And I kind of put two and two together. But, you know, I'm not too familiar with your background.
Everyone that's listening to the podcast, take your headsets off for a second. You're going to be like, oh, seriously, this is weird. When I was in college, Rolling Stone magazine called me the number one party animal in the country.
That's awesome.
Oliver Stone optioned the rights to my life. And that movie in like Hollywood turnaround became the movie Van Wilder.
Oh, no, shit.
Yeah.
That's based on you.
Yeah,
but not really,
but you know how Hollywood is.
Yeah.
The option started it. Some guy wrote a script. The option fell apart. He took a script, changed my name into Van Wilder and sold it.
I'm liking you better and better.
Shampoo. When I was in college, I robbed a train in Russia with the Russian mafia.
Shut the fuck up. Why didn't I do my homework?
I'm glad you didn't.
Do you have a book?
I'm in the middle of a book deal right now. I'm finishing it right now.
Wow, that's fucking amazing.
I've got some pretty butt of the partying thing is like what I think.
What was your party favorite of choice? What was your drinker? Were you, what was it, if you don't mind saying?
I'm still a drinker. Weed always, when I was young, I got way too high. Like at 15 or 16, that one time when you get way high and you fucking lose your mind.
Yeah.
And then, so I've always handled weed with like kid gloves, always. To this, like, and I smoked weed all through college.
Right.
But I was always very sensible not to smoke too much.
Right.
Cocaine, I mean, I've.
That was your thing?
No. Beer's my thing, but man, when you said I wouldn't do, like, I was like, if I didn't have high cholesterol and high blood pressure, I'd fucking totally do cocaine.
Really?
But yeah, but I was always the guy that could do one bump and then not touch it.
See,
again.
I grew up with my mom's husband was a coke head and an alcoholic, so I used to have to go to Al-Anon meetings for him as a kid. So I have ingrained in my head the devil of alcohol and cocaine. So I have kid gloves on when it comes to that. I'm very, you know,
really
weary.
So you're not a big drinker?
Not a huge drinker. I'm a medium drinker, and I was a big pothead for years, but now at this age, the weed kind of just slows me down, and I need as much energy as I can get.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, it makes me antisocial and internal, and I just am not into it. So I'm kind of been on this weird kick lately where I'm just like, you know that Huey Lewis song, I want a new drug.
Yeah.
Well, it's like everything bores me. There's nothing that's really, I don't have anything that's like, you know, gets me going, but drinking is a social lubricant. Just in LA, it's the hardest town in the world to have a drink in because you have to cab it everywhere, which is 30 minutes from everywhere, which is an expensive night. If you want to go out drinking, I live in Laurel Canyon. I'm spending $100 just to go get a light buzz in cabs and drinks.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like, you know, if I'm having a dinner party in my house, let's drink, you know. And I can only like blaze if it's like the end of the day and I'm home alone working on a song or something, but I can't go to the bank or the airport stoned anymore. Like, no way. I'd freak out. Like, people come up to me and like, hey, aren't you on that movie? I'm just like, you know.
Yeah, I obviously, since it's become so readily available in L.A., weed's just around everywhere.
It's just whatever, man.
But
it's so strong now, too. It's just like.
Oh, when you do Rogan's podcast, you'll get high then.
Yeah. I did Snoop's and I got too high. I was just like, and then I watched it. I was just like, so boring. I'm like, yeah, not a good idea.
The first time I did Rogan's, I didn't smoke at all. And then one time I did and I was just like. I remember being so amazed that I could hear the people in the room so clear in my ears that because I had headsets on,
right.
And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm not even fucking talking."
Yeah.
So, but the partying thing, I've always that's why I looked at you like, "Oh man, they must be drinking fucking cough syrup and fucking like just craziness."
We got high. We did our thing. But
really?
That, you know, again, I'm 39 years old, so
yeah.
So. You're looking at videos that are 6-7 years old, and even at that point, I already had been through my. I lived in New York City in my 20s and went big, you know.
So when I say like when I think like top five party nights where I go, I can think of just one event where it just got fucking chaos. Like, got my first night in New York, went down partying, and David Lee Roth recognized me. And I was like, shut the fuck. And I partied with David Lee Roth. And I remember, I'll never forget, Harvey Keitel was at the end of the bar with Abel Ferrara. And it was like just one of those epic nights. I ended up down in the Meatpassing District in my first gay bar. I'd never been to a gay bar. And I was watching dudes make, and I was like, this is fucking an epic evening.
Awesome.
It's like fucking insane. But what are your like, what is like a big party night for you? Like that you look back and you're like, that night was fucking chaos.
You know, it's funny, man. It's like all a blur. Like that's it. Like it's fucked up, man. You meet so many people and you go out so much that it's like, at least I have, that it all kind of is just one fucked up weird memory of just going out. And I mean, let me think about what really stands out. Like I remember Paris's 21st birthday, Paris Hilton's 21st birthday, went to Vegas. And
do you realize the sentence? Do you realize that sentence? How intense that sentence is for everyone listening.
Yeah.
I remember Paris's 21st birthday.
Yeah.
She is an icon, a social icon.
She's actually,
obviously she's pivotal in that people have opinions one way or the other.
She's the coolest, funniest girl ever. She knows what she's doing. She ain't stupid.
Yeah.
She's playing that like, whatever. She knows what the fuck she's doing. She's smart.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this much. We did a movie, a National Lampoon movie in Miami together.
Pledge this.
And that was probably the most partying I've done within 2 months in a city. It was just, it didn't stop. I mean, every single fucking night we were out drinking the whole shit. And I was with Paris Hilton when she was at the top. This is like 2003 or 4 when it was just like, she was Elvis. And we weren't dating, but we were doing I played her boyfriend in the movie. So we were out every night together, partying. And as far as the media knew, we were like together. But I love Paris to death, but that's not a girlfriend. That's a party friend and a friend. And we would go out every night. And every single night was just, you know, you can't describe it because I don't even know what happened. It was just like everywhere we went, part the seas. Here's your table. Here's the hottest girls. Here's whatever party favors you want. It wasn't reality. And I remember coming back from that movie and sitting on my couch in Laurel Canyon in my quiet little street. And it was just like, the brakes just stopped from this like 3 month, 2.5 month bender.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what the fuck just happened? I'll never have that experience again. Like one night of that would have been enough.
You're not social royalty. You're just a regular kid.
Yeah.
You went to a regular high school, had regular parents.
Yeah.
And became a VJ.
Yep.
And so it's not like you're Britney Spears, you know, or you're just,
yeah,
you seem, you're very down to earth, approachable. And I think that's one of the things that people connect with you with your music is
I'm just one of the boys, dude.
Right.
I'm just one of the boys. And you know what? I've never had that like super fame to where there was a crash and burn. Like it's always been kind of like.
Can you pass me that bottle opener behind you?
No way.
Right there. I'm fucking so hungover and I need a beer to right this ship.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't drive. I'm very. Anyone out there, never drink and drive, please.
I don't drink and drive. Good. I'm actually probably worse than you. I would no.
Good.
So,
What were you saying?
Paris.
And then...
And oh, yeah. You got done with that trip.
Yeah. I was just saying how I'm just... Oh, yeah. I've never had, like, the really, really super, like, you know, fame to where, you know, where do you go from there? It's like, I've constantly kind of just been, all you know, riding that wave of, you know, not sort of a household name. I guess people recognize me, but
it's a great name.
Yeah.
And it's really yours. Yeah. Simon Rex.
Yeah, my full name is Simon Rex Cutright.
Yeah.
But my first agent was like, Cutright, you sound like a British theater actor. Simon Rex has a snaz to it.
Defines the names of the 90s.
Yeah.
That was like, it was the perfect VJ name.
Yeah, man. And, you know, so I've always just sort of been like teetering right there on like famous, but not made, you know, and which is actually a blessing because, you know, it's kept me humble. It's kept fire under my ass to work hard. It's, you know, I've never gotten complacent. I've always been wanting to work, and that's why social media, things like Vine and YouTube and Twitter, have been a good tool to keep me out there and showing that I can write and do other things and be funny and not just stand there and read these lines, and you know what I'm saying? So I've been humbled, you know what I mean? I think I've you know, the peaks and the valleys, the ups and downs, and I'm glad that I never had the Super Bowl, because I might be dead right now. You know, it's scary. Yeah. Like, if I had the fame of like Adrian Brody or someone like that, or friends of mine who are really famous, like, I might be dead in fucking Saint-Tropez on a yacht right now.
Saint-Tropez on a yacht. That is a visual that I go, like, that is.
I don't know if I'd be able to handle that. So, I mean, at this point I would, but back in the day, I don't know if I would have been able to handle it. So luckily for me, it was always just, you know, people come up, hey, are you that guy from the, so it's not like too bad.
Yeah. What were you like in high school? Were you one of the cool kids?
I was a stoner who played basketball.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
That was one of the most shocking things out of that whole Atlanta video, by the way, was when you said you were 6'2". I was like, he's 6'2"?
Yeah.
I was like, shut the fuck up. I expected you to be like 5'9".
Yeah, 6'2", 6'5" with heels. Oh!
So you're just like a regular, do you still have friends from, like,
San Francisco? Yeah. So keep in touch with the core group of my friends from high school and middle school up in the Bay Area. And, you know, my whole sense of humor was molded by it. We used to play a game called Make Me Laugh, and we would sit on the couch and get fucked up. And the rule is you can't touch the other person, and you have to do whatever you can. And the first person to laugh has to get up and then make everyone else laugh. And it was kind of like doing stand up or, you know, improv, whatever. And you had to be quick and sharp and all the, and there was, I grew up by Oakland, so all the brothers would be real quick with the snaps and the mom jokes. So you had to be quick. You know, you had to be real quick.
Yeah.
You had to come right back with it. So I was at a young age molded into having to have a sharp sense of humor and a quick brain and be able to give it right back. So I think those, my friends I grew up with, molded what is now the Dirt Nasty and all the scary movie and the stuff I've got. And, you know, growing up watching, you know, scary, Naked Gun, Airplane, all these movies as a kid.
Dude. Airplane, established so many jokes that are simply just in my, like, it's the first time I ever heard, how you like your coffee, black, like my men.
I used that joke 2 days ago.
I always say, like my music.
Yeah, that's good.
I take my coffee black, like my music.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's, yeah, those movies are real kind of, what do you want to do? Like, do you have like goals? Do you have like, is there something, do you want to do serious acting?
I mean, you know, of course, if it's the right thing, you know, I really do love comedy, but.
Well, you're really good at comedy because you're extremely self-effacing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of being Jewish.
It is.
And you do not take anything fucking seriously. You don't take yourself seriously.
Dude, if you can't laugh at yourself, it's like, that's the thing. So many people with their egos that take, I find the comedy in serious actors who are so serious. Like David Zucker, who directed Airplane, Naked Gun, did Scary Movie 3, 4, and 5 with me. And, you know, he always told me they hired Leslie Nielsen because they'd be watching him in some serious movie, and he was so serious that it cracked them up.
Yeah.
So when they brought him in to audition for the movie, he was trying to be funny. They're like, no, Leslie, read it like you did in those serious movies, because the lines are funny. You play it serious and it's funny.
Yeah.
So.
Nice beaver.
What's that?
Nice beaver. Thanks. I just had it stuffed.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to him going, hey, nice beaver. That's not funny.
Yeah.
Just deliver the line. So there's, you know, but again, like if they're, you know, I've done a couple movies that were cool, like, you know, gangster roles or whatever, but I just don't connect with it as much. I'm not going to lie and sit here and say I'm some amazing method actor. No, I like to do comedy. I find the joke in everything. But I would love to do some cool, you know, like, look, a lot of comics make that leap, and I'm not comparing myself to them, but Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler, even, they'll go do a serious role and they fucking kill it.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier than going from drama to comedy.
Drama to comedy is almost impossible.
It's almost impossible. It's hard to watch when a serious actor wants to be funny. But when it happens the other way around, it's a beautiful thing to watch, because, you know, a lot of comedy comes from pain and serious, you know, all comics are fucked up. I mean, their comedy comes from a dark place, you know. And what I learned hanging out with Jordan Rubin, all these comics, was that in real life, they're so funny on stage. In real life, they're kind of like dark people, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them.
It's really the beautiful thing. The most beautiful thing about hanging out with comedians is you can't offend us.
Yeah.
And so we, when we're with each other, There is. I went to dinner last night with Ian Bagg and Tom Segura, two of my best friends, and we went with our wives, and I mean, if anyone was listening to that fucking table, they'd be like, what are these animals fucking? What's wrong with them? But
I love that shit. You ever watch the YouTube of me and New York Joey? You ever see those?
No.
I got to show you these. It's me and my buddy from New York, and all we do is make fun of each other. And I love it.
Yeah.
All he does is make fun of my acting career and my big nose, and I egg him on, and I want it.
Yeah.
And I love it, man.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. And like, I hate when I try to make fun of my friends and they get all sensitive. It's like, dude, get over yourself.
Yeah.
People's egos get in the way of everything. Someone said something to me really profound the other day. He's like, get out of your way.
Yeah.
Meaning, get out of your own way. Because I was in my head about something. I was like, dude, get out of your way. You're in your own way. And it was true. And there's a lot of people's problems. If you could just laugh at yourself, man, it's like, dude, that's what it's all about, man. It's all about laughing. To me, you know, laughter is the best medicine. And it's so hard for me to find shit that makes me laugh. I'm like a food and a comedy snob. Like, most shit doesn't make me laugh. Most food I don't like. But when you find the good shit, it's the best, you know. And that's why actually, like, there's some reality TV that I find to be fascinating because the characters are so funny the people are so funny. They're not acting that I find myself being guilty of, because I'm an actor, watching reality TV. Like, I'd rather watch First 48 than CSI Miami.
Yeah.
Because it's real.
Yeah.
You know, it's tragic and real. And some of these, you know, I don't know, man. It's just, I live for the joke all day long. I find the joke in everything, you know. Everything is, I'm looking for the joke, and I learned that from Swartzen and Jordan Rubin. I watch how their brains work.
Well, Nick's got a really, I will say, a really interesting brain.
Yeah,
the way his brain fires, and the way he writes jokes, it's, and what he looks at, he's a really fucking fascinating dude.
Yeah, he is.
Nick and I used to play a game where I was a joke. I have it. We used to pretend, as we all hung out at the improv, that we were trying to roofie each other.
Uh-huh.
So, like, when you weren't looking, they'd try to put it in their beer. Right, and it was me, my buddy Eddie, and my buddy Nick. And we just fucking do that forever. Yeah. And you do it to people that didn't know you were playing the game with them. And they'd be like, put something in your drink.
Yeah.
But, they're fucking awesome. Do you want to do serious roles?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I want to. I just want to work.
What's your goal? Like I say my goal. I put it out there because I want this. I want a four camera sitcom that shoots CBS Radford. That's
right.
Yeah, it's right there. It's fucking perfect.
Look, I've done sitcoms. That's the best gig you could possibly have as an actor. 4 days out of five, you show up in your pajamas and you don't have to have hair and makeup on, because as a guy, it's just the worst getting makeup and hair and all this shit. With every stroke of the brush, you feel more like a woman. I hate wearing all that makeup and shit. Sitcom's the best because you're doing it with a live audience. You're doing a play and it builds up all week and you're working on it, and then Friday night you shoot that. It's lights, camera, action, and you're shooting it in front of a live audience, so you get a reaction, but you could fuck up.
Yeah.
As opposed to a play on Broadway, you could fuck up and cut and do it again. So sitcom, I mean, my dream job would be I've done a few sitcoms, would be to be back on, just like you said, exactly, same thing. Multi-camera sitcom, live audience, dream job. And I'll say CBS Radford, dude, because I live 5 minutes from you.
Yeah.
So that would be
I'm in the middle of development. Maybe I'll put you in mine.
And I got I'm not going to jinx it, but I got a couple of things with Three Loco. That's me, Andy Milonakis, and Riff Raff that we just sold a TV show. It's just a pilot. I'm not going to say what network or anything because I don't want to put it out there yet for the negative people out there listening that are going to hate.
There's no one negative on this podcast.
There might be one listener who hates me. Who knows? But anyway, so I got, you know, something that I wrote, created, produced that could be really fucking amazing. And I want to get on that side of stuff too. You know, I really do. I'm tired of reading other people's bad writing. I want to do, like, I just did a movie in New Orleans and the writers let me do, and I'm not saying they're writing bad because the script was hilarious, but they let me just improv. I'd come to set with rewritten jokes and they'd let me do it. I love that. I have good ideas, I'd like to think, in my head that are as good, if not better, than most of the shit that I get sent to me. And so I would love to get on the writing. I don't know about directing. I tried directing once, and that was a fucking very difficult job. It took a certain breed of human I directed a music video, and it was the most exhausting thing I've ever
What music video was it?
It was just a Swayze video. When the guy who produced 1980 had a kid named Swayze that's one of my friends. He's like a rapper, and I directed a music video for 2 days, and it was I realized, I'm like, this isn't what I'm supposed to do. But like writing and producing, and I'm pretty good at finding talent, like, you know, Riff Raff, Mickey Avalon. I find these guys out there that people are like, really? Who's this motherfucker? And then a year later, like, I love him. I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
Mickey Avalon was a fucking diamond.
Yeah,
I've really enjoyed that dude, and he had the whole allure of street hustler slash pimp slash drug addict.
It had never been done before.
Yeah,
and so I like producing music, physically producing music, and finding talent and putting them together. And
I think
I have that Jewish like knack for seeing something in someone and putting
Jewish
it together.
Knack.
You know what I mean?
Great,
like,
yeah.
It's just that mind that's working. It's like the you know. The brain's always like thinking, how can this monetize? How could this work? How could I put this person with that person?
Well, I think in you're probably going to dismiss this, but I think that you will have had a hand in diffusing homophobia.
In the sense
that you like Mickey Avalon,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
like
yeah.
and like the Steven character,
uh-huh.
And it's like I always say, gay shit makes me laugh so hard. Anything,
me too.
It's
like,
I get a
cares?
Kick.
It's like,
yeah, who gives a fuck?
Yeah,
like
this America. I mean, I'm just. It's just like, dude, if someone wants to fucking suck another dude, it's like, who gives a fuck? And to me, it's not even the joke. Isn't that somebody is gay? That's not funny. What's funny is. You know,
what's funny is that people are bothered by it.
Yes,
that's the thing. That,
it's like,
the fact
gives
that
a fuck.
Yeah.
What someone else wants to do.
Yeah, I always.
Those
say,
are the ones that are the fucking weirdos and the closet freaks, and probably the ones who are like living tortured inside. And
yeah.
It's like, dude, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Some of the funniest motherfuckers and talented people I know are gay. It's just like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, the Steven thing. It's funny. I thought I would get a lot more hate on it, but it's like I get approached by gay dudes who are just like, that Steven shit is hilarious.
Yeah.
And once in a blue moon, I'll get like, this is so stereotypical. And it's like, no, the joke isn't about being gay. The joke is the voice that I do, the fact that my shirt's always off, the fact that, and the real joke is that I have an identical twin who's so narcissistic that he wants to sleep with his straight brother and convert him into being gay.
Yeah.
That's the joke. It's not that he is gay. It's that he's wants to fuck himself.
Yeah.
To me, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's a joke that hasn't really been done. So I'm actually about to shoot a pilot separately from the other one, The Steven Show, with Brittany Furlan, who's a really big Viner. She's hilarious.
She's fucking – I just went on your Vine and just followed who you followed.
Yeah, that's
so I was
exactly
like, that's how you.
People.
That's
go
exactly how you do
yeah,
it.
I found the gold.
I got Jordan Bird out of that. I got Brittany.
Yeah, I got some good ones.
I got some really good ones. Even the dude – I don't know if you know – if you follow the dude who has a band who tortures his girlfriend.
Oh, but he stopped calling. He was amazing. He's one of the first people I saw in Vine that really sold me on it. And – he hasn't done it in a while. I think he stopped. But
I think
that,
he was on tour.
Maybe they broke up because this whole joke was fucking with this girl who took it like a champ. She was hilarious.
Yeah.
She was so sweet and nice, and he'd pour a drink out of her hand. I thought that was hilarious. But yeah.
Yeah, the joke about homosexuality, like I always say, I say on stage, I'm not homophobic, I'm a homochondriac.
Right.
I don't care about your gay lifestyle. I'm afraid you'll get me drunk one night and trick me into it, and I'll like
it. Right.
So
that's funny.
But yeah, I don't. I think that. I don't know what it is, but I find that shit funny.
Me too. It's like I'm from San Francisco, dude. My godfather was gay. It doesn't mean it's whatever, dude. It doesn't mean shit to me. It's the character of Steven that I'm portraying on Vine doesn't even have to be gay. He could just be this weird, annoying guy. I just thought the joke of him wanting to fuck his twin brother was just so weird and creepy, and there was so much endless material there. That's what's funny to me. He's gay. It's like, dude, really? It's like,
So you were in a relationship for 4 years?
Yeah, I was in a relationship on and off for 4 years with this girl who I won't say her name. Cameron Diaz. Who's not in the industry because I don't like dating actresses. As two actors together is just a nightmare. I'm the crazy, weird fucking guy who's like, you know, look at me. I'm posting vines and fucking videos. I need to be the crazy one, and I need some like grounding, normal person. So,
have you dated famous chicks?
What's that?
Have you dated famous chicks?
Yeah, I dated Jamie Presley, which was a lot of work because, you know, we did that show together. We did Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
So I met her. And this was 10 years ago, and we couldn't go anywhere. It was a nightmare. And, you know, it's just two actors together sitting around waiting to get a job is a recipe for disaster. I need a girl that goes to work 9 to 5, and I could be the one at home going crazy, working on music and doing my shit, and then I have my normal, like, I need a little normal, you know. So that's kind of my thing.
You think you'll get married and have kids?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I can't wait to.
Really?
I just haven't met that girl yet. And it's tough to meet that girl in L.A. because almost every girl here is comes to L.A., to make it in showbiz. So
and you become more of an acquisition of, oh shit, I just raised my status.
And not only that, and it's like there's no way to say this without sounding vain, but it's like I have to assume that almost any girl I meet out here might see me as a meal ticket or a way to help their career, even though I'm not even established that much. I'm done some stuff, but for the chick who just got off the bus from Louisiana or wherever the fuck, like, I'm Tom Cruise to them, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to be very weary and defensive. And anytime a girl recognizes me and is like, aren't you the guy from that show? Then it's immediate. I can't hook up with this girl. Who knows what they're capable of? This is a sick world out there. So I got to meet a chick who doesn't know who the fuck I am. And in L.A., that's tough.
It's really fucking hard.
But I just got out of a 4-year relationship. It's a little time to focus on my own shit. But, I'm pushing 40. It's time. I want to be able to throw the football with my kid and not have my back go out when he's 10, you know?
Yeah.
So I am so down for that. But obviously you got to meet the right girl.
I would fucking, you know how you guys would pay money to take your dick out for a test drive?
You know?
Just fucking one night of being single and being you in Hollywood, just fucking lighting pussy on fire.
Yeah, I've done it for so long and it's fun. But at the end of the day, at this point in my life, I love kids. I fucking love kids. And you can always go on to fucking you porn and rub one out and then hit end afterwards and be like, thank God I didn't, you know.
Have you ever dated a porn star?
No, never. No, that's, I can't, I remember I met one once that was like, gay, like I met some chick and my boy's like, yeah, she's a big porn star. And she's like, yeah, we should hang out sometime. I have to work tomorrow. So I'm like, oh yeah, let's hang out after work tomorrow. Like, what a turnoff, you know? Like, even a stripper's gnarly enough, much less a porn star.
Yeah.
That's some serious shit. Never dated a porn star. Talking about dating an actress is bad enough. A porn star, Jesus.
So this has been fucking awesome, man. I really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This is a fucking...
Are we almost done? Is that what this is?
Yeah, we can... Well, it's been an hour.
Oh, is that about how long the show is?
We do an hour. Yeah, you do it.
I get another 7 hours. I'm good.
Hey, it's so funny. I heard you say that you were Jewish in that video, but watching you, you don't come off like on YouTube. I don't see anything on you other than white dude. But so funny is that once you texted me and you started getting, like, you were like, what time? How long will it last? What should I... Not, like, I was like, oh, I totally see. I see Gary Goldman. You know who Gary Goldman is?
No.
Gary Goldman and you guys might be the two best-looking Jewish guys in the world.
Oh.
He was on Last Comic Standing. He was, he's like 6'5", ripped, like, just... But he's real funny. Yeah. But Gary's like you. One text, and
it's it's funny. It's not just a religion; it's a mind, and it's, you know, I was baptized, but my mother's Jewish, therefore I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
So if Hitler walked in here, he would kill me. So I have that voice that keeps me up at night, that rattles around in my brain, but it's also that voice that drives me, you know, and it doesn't have to be. I don't have to go to a fucking temple to be Jewish. I'm Jewish by blood. So, you know,
How do you write a rap song? Do you see lyrics the same way I see jokes?
Yeah, I do. I find the joke and I find the punchline, and I've done stand up too, and it's not the same writing process because it's more like I might find an idea for a song and then the beat comes later, but often it'll be like I hear a beat and then I'll kind of find a rhythm to it, and then I'll think, okay, what's an original concept for a song that hasn't been done yet that could be funny? Like, I have a song called Black Girls that's on Beardo. I have a new song called Black Girls, which is treading on thin ice, but the whole joke is that we defend black girls and say how horrible white girls are. Two of the whitest guys ever just going, black girls are the best. White girls are always depressed. Black girls, you know, good in bed. White girls just lay there dead. Like, so we're just saying how wonderful black girls are and how awful white girls are. So I played it for a few of my black friends that are girls, and then I was like, okay, listen to this before I put this out into the universe.
Yeah.
Is this okay? And I hit play, and they just sat there listening to every single word, waiting for me to fuck up. And they're just like, you're good. Like, yeah, that's great. Thank you. So, you know, it's about finding original material to write, you know, but that's, you know, obviously that's a one-note joke, but spread out over 3 minutes with punchline, punchline, punchline.
It was like my dick was a one-note joke.
Exact
but
same formula.
My dick was fucking...
Yeah.
That was a fucking great song.
Yeah, I produced that beat, too. So I make beats at my house and my studio, so I'm really into producing. And, you know, a lot of rappers, like, you know, up and coming, hey, I'll pay, you know, let's do a song together. And I'm like, well, if you're not... like doing comedy rap, then I don't, unless, you know, obviously a fucking Lil Wayne hit me or something. But as far as working with other rappers, like, I just don't need to work with anyone outside of my circle because it has to be fun and funny and light and not taking itself seriously. And I can't do a song with some dude who's just like fucking packing the gat and all this shit. It just doesn't fit.
You know?
I'm not trying to be tough. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm just poking fun at myself as an actor in Hollywood, which to me is endless material.
Yeah.
And even people that can't relate, it's still Hollywood's fascinating to people. So it's kind of like a window into
Hollywood is life. Fascinating.
It is. The whole world's fascinating.
And you literally are a window treatment. Your life is a window treatment, and people look at it and they're like all the preconceived ideas I had about you before you came over are like complete, like, it's insane to think that you can put that much thought into just watching someone's life on YouTube.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm the same way. I'll find people on YouTube that I'm fascinated with, and like that's how I found Riff Raff. You know, I was fascinated with this guy, and in one of his raps he said his phone number. And I called the phone number and he answered.
Are you serious?
That's how I met him.
Type
in A Day with Riff Raff Part 1 and you will see me and Andy Milonakis drive to his hotel, meet him, shake his hand on camera, and the rest is history.
Are you serious?
I was on that Charlie Sheen tour a couple years ago, that abominable comedy tour, and I would do 1980 at the end of the show. And I even interviewed him on some of the shows too, but... Riff Raff was in Cleveland, and I was like, hey, Riff, come by my hotel. And he came by like the Four Seasons or whatever hotel Charlie put me up in. And I was like, dude, you need to move to LA, bro. You need to get the fuck out of Cleveland and Houston and wherever you're fucking living and come to LA. You're a star. He comes to LA, lives on my couch. The rest is history.
Are you serious?
And I love facilitating that. I live for it. I don't want any money out of it. I'm not trying to give me 5%. No, I see it and I want it to happen. And then when I see him, he's got the cover of LA Weekly coming out. I'm just like, fuck everyone. I was right. When everyone else was like, why are you fucking with this clown? Dude's a genius. You're wrong.
He is. I was obsessed with him.
I'm obsessed with his YouTube. I'm his friend and I still watch his YouTubes. Like, the guy's an alien.
I'm a real boy.
Yeah. Like a real
like
boy.
Like a real boy.
He's just so... Like, me and Andy like to think that we're funny guys, but when we hang out with Riff, the floor is his. And we just sit back and we're like, dude... We don't have to do anything because Riff's, my stomach will, we go to record a song. If you ever want to come by and just like a studio session, we record at my house, just like this room, and we just fucking write and hang out and it's the funnest process.
Really? I would love to, if you guys
do
were recording.
A piece on us or come hang and put it up. We could do a podcast with the boys. I could have them come by and we could do something and play a song, whatever. Like,
I'll do that
anytime.
In a heartbeat. Yeah. I'd love to do that. What's in the store for Three Loko? What do you guys got?
We have our album out on iTunes, Three Loko. Mad Decent, Diplo put it out. Did some beats on it. I got a beat on there too.
Diplo had a show on Travel Channel.
Did he really? I didn't know about that.
It was Diplo. Oh, it was like Anthony Bourdain, but he went around and explored music. It was really fascinating. We all went to dinner, me, him, and Adam Richmond. What kind of show would you want if you had a show on Travel Channel?
I'd want, you know, it's funny, me and Adam been talking. I'm a foodie and I like to go out and drink. I wanted, the dream job would also be to do like the travel food drink show. Like, as far as like, hey, you know, You got $1,000 and you want to go fucking have a good time for a couple days with your boys. Here's a realistic vacation for you. And you know, something like that would be cool, where you find the cool little dive bars and the street meet and the fucking the places you might not ever heard to go and see it through like this, through some single, you know, sort of younger guy, you know, something like that would be amazing.
You could do
like
that.
I would love to do that. I've been talking with Adam about it. We'll see. You know, he's got a, you know, he produces now. So that would be fucking amazing. I mean, who doesn't want a fucking travel food show? Like, really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I got to go to Montreal and eat fucking some poutine and fucking go to a bar. Oh, that's what I do anyway.
Yeah.
Get paid for it.
You should do that, man. I guarantee you, Laureen and Andy and everyone would put you on in a heartbeat. So Three Locos just got their album out.
Yeah, the album's been out. We're always doing new songs. We'll probably put out another album soon. But right now, I'm really just focused on my Dirt Nasty album, which again, August 20th. But you could order it now on iTunes, and it's really funny. And
it's called Palatial.
Yeah, it's one of my slang. Me and my friends always say Palatial and Regalia. That's sort of our little slang words that we use for no reason whatsoever. And the album, I'm really happy with it. It came out really good. It's really fun. You got some cool videos with it. And so check it out.
That's fucking awesome, man. Well,
thanks for having me.
No, don't mention it. And we'll try to do something. Maybe I'd love to come up to the studio and fucking listen to you guys.
Yeah, we do a session, man.
Yeah, drink two beers.
It's so lax. Yeah, we just literally just, it's just a hangout session. A lot of laughs.
And what your Vine is at Simon Rex, at Dirt Nasty?
Simon Space Rex is the Vine.
And your
Instagram is Simon Rex 415. And YouTube 415,
is that San Francisco?
Yeah, I grew up in San Big Bay Area fan.
Well, I appreciate it.
Sports.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.